My name is Mitch Maxine. As always, if you have any comments or questions, please post them to my fuck me in this fucking podcast.
I identify as a professional.
Okay, folks, welcome to another edition of the Know Mind Podcast. My name is Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, please post them to the Know Mind Podcast Facebook page, my personal Facebook page, or drop an email to knowmindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Here we are again. Very exciting night. Let's go around and say hi to everybody. First of all, let's start with Bob. Hey, Bob, what's up, man?
It's fun to be here yet again. How was it, 2 weeks ago? And yeah, that seems about the right amount of time for me to sort of reset my clock and get ready to talk again.
Thank goodness we're all able to stay to Bob's schedule.
Welcome to Joe, who hasn't been introduced yet, but he's a new guy, and welcome anyway. And Mitch, I was just looking at the talking point PDF that you sent, and I noticed at the top that, which you announce every episode, that the way to get in touch with you is with the Know Mind Podcast 2021 at gmail.com. And I'm thinking, what happens? There's going to be a Know Mind Podcast in 2037. And it's just weird that this thing has gone on for, what, two years? And it's probably going to keep going for 10 or 15 until several of us drop dead, especially you. Like, once you drop dead, it's probably not going to last much longer. But anyway, yeah, hey, let's go.
Rick, how you doing, man?
Not bad, Mitch. It's good to be back again. And again, welcome to Joe. This should be a fairly interesting evening.
Lenny, how are you, brother?
How's it going, guys? Still recovering from the last one. It got really heated the last night. I'm not sure how much I had to listen to it. And thought, there's so much more that didn't make it to air that we were all roaring and shouting at each other. And it was a baptism of fire for our last new guest. So welcome aboard, Joe. Just to let you know, nothing gets personal, although it does get crazy. So,
all right, Darren, how are you, man?
Excellent. I echo what Lenny said about the last podcast. That was good, because sometimes we all just sit there and agree with each other and nothing gets done, and then all of a sudden the last one, there was a lot of opinions kicking around and stuff. I missed last week. I ended up getting drunk for no reason, so I don't like these Fridays where there's no podcast, because we got another new person on. Joe's obviously got a wealth of experience. He'll entertain him, and Richie again as well, so it's like, it's going to be a good one, because there's a lot of us on here. Some of us will be talking over others, and
yeah, let's try and keep that to a minimum.
Speak for yourself.
Jesus Christ. Okay, folks, before we go on, I want to introduce our guest on tonight's podcast. Joe Galley's been around in the martial arts world as long as I can remember being in the martial arts community here in Southern Ontario. I'll be perfectly honest, I don't know what Joe's background is in terms of his training. In my mind, Joe's claim to fame is absolutely tournament oriented, a lot of tournament experience, a lot of tournament promotion. I know he does a lot of judging at tournaments. So Joe Galley, welcome to the podcast and introduce yourself to the folks.
Thanks very much, Mitch. I've been around since 74. I started in Chitoru Karate with Angelo and Gino Ajitsi. And then I ended up, they closed the school up in Thornhill. So I went, they told me to go up and see Steve Reynolds. So I trained with him for 45 years. At one time, I used to go to at least 10 to 25 tournaments a year. And the last 3 years that I was competing, I went to 42 tournaments in Ontario and Quebec, Northern and Southern Quebec and Northern Ontario, Michigan, Ohio, West New York, and Pennsylvania. I've competed mainly as a fighter, and whenever they had self-defense, of course, doing the jiu-jitsu. I went in the self-defense divisions as well.
With that pedigree, you can see why we wanted to have Joe on the podcast tonight. The topic tonight is tournaments in general, and we're going to break it down to into a bunch of specific topics. But Joe's got a wealth of experience, obviously, in tournaments, both in competition as well as in promotion. And we've all been around to tournaments. We've all been to a bunch of them. So let's get started with the first talking point. So here we go. And we'll start out in a controlled way and just let the chaos ensue as it will. So I want to start with a really basic question about tournaments. What is the value of competition? Where is the value in the context of the martial arts of competing? Is there a defensible value? And I've got some interesting points. Well, I've got some points. Whether they're interesting or not is for you guys to decide. But who wants to jump in first? What is the value? Is there a value to competition? Darren, what do you think?
Yeah, just very innocently. Okay, yes, lots of people start taking karate as an adult or whatever discipline you're in when you're entering a tournament. But I think if you take it from a lot of us started at a young age, I actually remember Joe when I was a kid in the 70s going to tournaments. So that puts my age somewhere around his probably. But I think as a kid, it's the same as any sport. It's just the same aspects that you get from training, the camaraderie, the discipline, being part of a team, the competition, everything that competition helps you to achieve both mentally and physically. So not so much that thing that to prove yourself against someone else or to measure your abilities or anything. If that's what you're into, that's fine. But I think just as a general learning experience, it's the same as any sport. Why does a kid play baseball or basketball or football or anything like that? It's just it makes them part of a team. It makes them have goals that they need to achieve. They learn from trying to help the team achieve, being part of a team player. It just helps them do everything else in life. It's so important. And I think the tournaments do that. If you're just training in a club, you're getting a certain amount of whatever your discipline and physical attributes and whatnot. But the whole tournament setting just puts it into a competition, which I think kids need to learn as they go. As far as an adult, I'll let everybody else talk about their aspects, and I'm sure it'll be covered. But that's what I think as a kid growing up. I think it has all the attributes of any other sport, or not necessarily even sports. If you're going to the spelling bee, like whatever it is, it's just the competitive side that creates goals that you need to strive to achieve, as opposed to just settling for mediocrity.
Okay, I really want to jump in there for a second because Darren makes a good point. Look, I think that the need to compete is extremely strong in the human condition. I think human beings on a very primal level want to compete. That's why competition sports are so popular. However, the point I want to make relative to what Darren said was very often the marketing around the martial arts has nothing to do with competition. A lot of martial arts schools, They cut their marketing teeth on the notion that it's not about being better than the other guy. It's about being better than yourself, self-improvement. That's what a lot of schools use as the foundation for their marketing. And when you talk about making yourself better, we've all heard the expression, the only person you need to be better than is the person you are right now. When you go into a competition setting, into a tournament setting, that's out the window, because who I am isn't what I'm being judged on at a tournament. So I don't dispute anything that Darren just said, but leveraging off that, what do you guys think about the notion of the basic marketing of the martial arts as an individual progressive endeavor versus what it actually is, which is a completely competitive endeavor?
The way I look at it is, yeah, you go to a martial arts club to learn a martial art, and you try to get better at what you're learning. And that's what the idea is. But eventually, you want to go out and see if any of the stuff you learned actually works. And
but is a tournament the best place to do that?
That where you don't have to get, you won't get charged.
But let's break that down, Joe. I mean, if we want to learn about, if we want to try and test the efficacy of what we learn in class, tournaments aren't really the best place to do that because it's so laden with rules and it's so laden with requirements. Whoa, and
I'm sorry, they shouldn't be. They shouldn't be so laden. Tournaments ought to be the place where you should be able to gauge your ability. I mean, that's just a 101.
At a karate tournament, you're allowed to kick and punch and block and stuff. I used to train with someone, and he worked as a bouncer. So whatever Sensei Reynolds taught him, he'd go and practice it when he was working at night as a bouncer.
Now that I can see. I can see that as being a testing ground for what you learn. But tournaments aren't like that.
Well, it depends. Go to some of the jiu-jitsu tournaments.
Yeah, but we don't go to jiu-jitsu tournaments. No, we go to karate tournaments.
This is so crooked. This is so off kilter to what's the truth. Of course tournaments, of course fighting in tournaments has a bearing on your ability to take care of yourself in a real situation.
Yes.
No, it doesn't. No.
Well, it's dependent on the rules.
Exactly. If you go to a karate tournament, there's certain things you can't do, right? You can't elbow someone in the face. You can't punch someone in the face. You have to pull it or try to. And it's the way the tournaments are set up is so you can do the technique without hurting your competition.
Rick, what do you think?
Yes.
Wait, I'll go.
Let Rick go.
I'm still listening.
Okay, Lenny, you go.
You motherfucker.
You got 2 hours. You got 2 hours.
Anybody but Bob.
This is going to open up an awful lot of the progressive talking points. I think the format of competition has changed so much from, as we say, back in the day to the way it is today, that I personally think years ago it was a better gauge of how well you had progressed, because it was a lot heavier, contact was a lot more allowed. And nowadays, to me, I'm very disillusioned with a lot of it, because it's who's the fastest to tip somebody. It's a test of speed more so than how effective you are. I mean, this is fresh off the press for me, because I was at our national championships for juniors at the weekend. I stood there scratching my head at half of it because I was kind of asked to eat. Jesus Christ, spare me. It got to the stage where if somebody feigned tears, their opponent was getting warned for excessive contact, and I was kind of, Jesus, let them have a bit of fucking contact and let them go with each other for a bit, because we're preaching them from day one to block this way, hit that way, the other way. But yeah, but you have to go out and this is supposed to be their line check of how far they've come, and yet they can't do what they're being taught. So to me, I've always tried to explore other styles. I've always advocated it, and I think Joe made the point that I'll go off to a jiu-jitsu tournament if you want to do that. Yeah, we don't. We're karate practitioners first and foremost. Most of us on the feet here, but I do think that the rules of competition have strangled the ability to test us to where we should be.
Okay, I just want to put one comment in before we go to Darren, and that comment is, I don't care how far back you go or how much we think it was better in the old days than it is now. Yeah. No matter how far back you go, there are rules you have to follow. And as long as there are rules you have to follow, that automatically takes that competition out of any kind of realistic
encounter. Wrong.
I don't agree. I'm with Bob.
Wrong.
You guys are wrong. Darren, what do you think?
We're not wrong. We just disagree.
No, you're wrong.
Everybody has their own opinion, right?
No, yeah, but mine's right. Darren, go ahead.
I just think I'm not sure where you guys are going with this, really, because, I mean, it still is a test. Is it the test of how well you can defend yourself in a street situation? Maybe not. But is that what we're advocating? Like, if you want to test that, you can do that in the dojo with all the other students. So when you're going to a competition, it's not the same because there are different rules to follow. But the two sides to that. Okay, if you go to a jiu-jitsu tournament, there's still rules there. You can't break the guy's arm. So if you're on the street and you go to do something, and maybe you can break the guy's arm there, but the other guy might be fighting the same thing, so he breaks your arm. And that's not what you're all about in a tournament, because you don't want to break the guy's arm, so you have to have those rules. But I think the fact that you can still execute the moves up to a certain level is still a test of it. You don't have to actually physically do it. And I think if you can get in and out, okay, yes, I agree with what Lenny said. It seems like a game of tag sometimes. But there's still, if you can get in and tag the guy in a real fight, maybe you can get in and actually stab him or punch him or do some real damage because you've practiced your speed and your accuracy and your pinpoint and all that sort of stuff. So I think it has merits. I'm not advocating for it. I know the pros and cons of it, but I still think it has a lot of pros that are worthwhile. They're just different depending on why you're training and why you're entering competition.
Mitch, I really don't get your perspective here. You seem to be saying that your ability at tournament sparring has no bearing on self-defense in real situations.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Of
course it does. To echo what Darren just said, it depends on the rules. The closer the rules are to no rules, like they are in the street, the closer they are, the more realistic your expectation of actually...
Okay. Okay, let's take the tournament competition that is, as far as I can see, in a regulated way, the closest you'll ever get to a street fight, which is UFC. Let's use that as a base, okay? From relative to the tournaments that we attend in the martial art, in the karate world, the UFC is far closer to what it's actually like in a street fight, okay?
Even that
is so restricted by... okay, first of all, I want to make this clear. I think tournaments are valuable. I think tournaments are great. I think there's a lot of positive about tournaments. But I think that tournaments offer a deceptive and incomplete and inaccurate scale or measure of how somebody would actually do in a real fight.
It's precisely because they're so different from the UFC rules.
The thing is, the UFC is no different. As soon as you take a fighting competition and impose rules on it, look, if I was in an actual street fight, one of the things that I was taught very early in my career is in an actual fight, the last thing you hit your opponent with are your hands and your feet. You pick up a brick and you cave his head in.
Go to ground.
The point being that with the rules that are imposed on organized competition, it takes out any practical value.
Wrong.
Well, I appreciate you hearing me out, though, Bob. Thanks. Rick, you haven't said anything yet.
I got to totally disagree with you, Mitch, on that one, because even the sparring and stuff in a tournament still starts getting you... acquainted with the violence of a fight. Now, it is all controlled. It has got rules. A street fight doesn't, so the violence would be up to quite a bit. But it still puts you in a position of saying, okay, I know that if he starts swinging, I have to dodge. I have to block. I have to do something. So it gives you that introduction to a street fight. It is very controlled, still an introduction to fighting.
I didn't say that learning how to fight successfully at tournaments is absolutely no use in a street situation. I didn't say that. But let me give you a scenario. You have Well, maybe people should listen to what I say instead of assuming what I mean. Here's what I'm saying. If I take someone who's fought in 150 tournaments, karate tournaments, that person is going to be very much more prepared for a street fight than someone who's never been in a tournament or never trained before. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I agree.
But if I take a person who's been in 150 tournaments and put him in a street fight against someone who's been in 150 street fights, who's going to win the street fight?
We're not contesting that.
Then that's my point. Then we all agree. Let's move on.
Just a goddamn minute.
Joe swore. Nice.
Get in there, Joe.
Come on, Joe.
Welcome to the podcast. Let Joe talk. Yep, go ahead, Joe.
Yep.
You're comparing apples to oranges. I am a Japanese jiu-jitsu competitor, right? I'm not a Brazilian jiu-jitsu competitor because they stole it from friggin' judo.
Oh, hello.
Wow.
Let him finish.
It's true because the stuff they teach in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, we start doing as green belt. That's when we do our ground stuff.
Bring this back to the street fighting thing. Let's focus on that.
But the street fighting thing, that's like my, a tournament fight is totally different from a street fight.
You're making my point for me.
I know I am. But it's
nice.
True.
That's two against five. Two against three.
No.
Wait a minute. If you have a street fighter who's done 100 fights and you've got a tournament point fighter who's had 100 fights, I'm going with the street fighter, my man, because he's lived the life.
Oh my God. That's my point.
You're saying about tournaments. You're talking two different aspects completely, right?
Bob's about to have an aneurysm. Bob, what are you thinking there?
Look, it's easy. This is easy. Those martial arts which most resemble street fight in their rules will produce fighters that are better able to take care of themselves in a street fight. What the fuck is the problem here?
Okay. Well, first of all, dial it down a bit, man.
No, you got me passionate about this shit.
Yeah, blame me.
Hey, yeah, I think there's steam coming out of Bob's ears.
Anyway, don't get me started on how watered down the rules are in South Ontario karate tournaments. Like, that's a different issue in my mind.
Later on in the podcast.
Remove as many rules as you can and still keep it safe for the competitors.
Okay,
Can I ask a question? It more closely resembles
a street fight. I don't understand the problem with this, Mitch.
Hang on. Okay, Bob. Are you saying that the way tournaments are run in Southern Ontario now resemble street fights by any definition?
No, that's my point.
I think we've all been yelling over each other so much that we may have all forgotten what the actual debate is. So let's pull it back to the actual talking point, which is what is the value of tournaments? And if you want to delve into it more accurately or more effectively prepares you for a street fight, fine. But let's go around the table and speak to the defensible advantages or benefits of competition and tournaments.
Okay, let me just clarify that. You mean according to the way they are now in Southern Ontario point competition, right?
Versus what?
We're talking about the continuum between shitty, watered-down rules versus harder core, closer to street fight rules.
No, I think just tournaments in general. Let's just leave it at that.
Well,
oh my God. The rules as they are now, I will rail against them to my dying day. But if that's what you're talking about in your talking point?
It just says what's the value of tournaments.
Right, just generally, where's the value in a tournament? That's the talking point in general.
Man.
So
I don't understand what's so hard to understand about this.
Okay. Well, one, if you'd actually make a point instead of yelling at everybody, then maybe we'd understand what you're talking about.
I've been making points for 45 minutes, and you don't seem to comprehend it. tournaments can be great, and they're not right now. And is that your point? Is that where we are? Are we talking about tournaments as they are now in Southern Ontario,
okay, Bob,
with Point Karate?
So I what got a tournament? Question, Bob.
Go, Joe.
When
yeah.
was the last yeah. time you went to a tournament?
Oh, fuck you, Joe. I'm old. I'm less old than you, but no, you have a point, Joe. And it was, what, Mitch? What were you just saying? 10, 15?
1904, I think.
Oh, you fucking asshole. Let's say 15 years ago, Joe.
You guys are going on about the tournaments. You know, let's face it, the reason why, I'm going to tell you why I went to the tournament, to see if the things I was learning at the dojo in the sparring aspect, if I could put it to use. I learned how to move my head so it wouldn't get hit, learned angles and other techniques. That helped. And that's what tournaments are all about. What? Oh, dear. But like I told you, you're comparing a street fight to a tournament. There's no comparison.
Then why would you bring up the notion of going to a tournament to see how effective your techniques actually are?
Because it doesn't matter. Like even if you're just if you're learning how to spell, you go to a spelling competition just to see how effective your spelling is. It doesn't matter whether you're the smartest person in the world or anything. Like it's just your whatever your techniques are they working? It doesn't matter will they work on the street or are they just working in general?
Okay, but
I got a question, Mitch. Just hypothetically. Yeah. I know, yes. I don't know if it was you or Bob or both of you into Aikido. If you entered a tournament to be judged on your skill of drawing a sword, is that realistic in the streets? No, because no one draws swords in the street. But if you're going there to test your ability and see how good you are at drawing the sword and be judged on it, is that not the pro of that tournament kind of thing?
Darren makes a brilliant point when we talk about testing our ability to see how effective it is, we have to put some context around that. And it's much easier with stuff like Aikido and Iaido that don't pretend to be practical, but it's a little murkier when we talk about point sparring. So
I think that's what Joe was saying, was just testing your skills.
Okay,
you're
but let me
the street. You're testing your skills to see have you advanced? Is it comparable to other people?
Okay, so hold on, let me frame this. If you go to a tournament to see if your tournament fighting skills hold up against other tournament fighters, then yes, I absolutely agree. That's a perfectly valid reason to go to a tournament. So if we're framing it in a tournament fighting perspective, then of course tournaments have value in terms of proving the effectiveness of what you do because you're fighting in tournament rules. Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
God damn it.
If I didn't go to as many tournaments as I did, I wouldn't have met half you assholes.
Well, that's no defense of tournaments, my friend.
That's a negative point.
Exactly.
Yeah. Maybe. Well, you mean I could have not met you, Joe? Nice.
No, I'm like, Joe's like, why do I know Mitch? This is a waste of my fucking time. Okay, so let's take this. Let's take the street fighting aspect out of it, okay? So I guess we've all agreed that one of the values of tournaments is to test your point fighting skill on a wider stage, on a wider platform. Is that reasonable?
And cut.
Yeah.
Sure.
Great. And Kata.
Consensus.
Fine.
No.
Let's leave Kata for a second because that's a whole different animal.
No, but I mean, you're testing it to see.
Yeah, but that's not what Kata's about. So I don't think Kata should be tested on that stage. So let's talk about that for a second.
No one ever
teaches Kata, I don't think. In my experience, no one teaches Kata with the notion of, I'm going to teach you this Kata so you can be better at that guy or that person when you do it. Kata is probably the ultimate form of personal progression in the martial arts. And yet, we put it in a competitive framework at a tournament. There's a almost an inherent cut. Hang on, there's all the notion of kata, as I understand it, and as I like to practice it, has nothing to do with whether it's better than somebody else's or not. I think kata is that one part of the training that is sacrosanct in that way. It's above the mediocrity of competition. It's above the pedestrian notion of can I do it better than the other guy.
I applaud that.
I gotta jump in.
Hang on, just let me finish.
I'm next in line.
Yeah,
I know, but you're a different topic.
Hang on. To me, kata is. Hey, no! Shut up and let me finish my point. God damn it!
Shut up!
Okay, so at least I didn't say shut the fuck up.
Yet.
To me, kata is that part of the martial arts that I almost revere more than any other, because it's so personal and because it is so. Beyond the notion of can I do it better than the other guy, I really think that kata has a very pristine place in my perspective of the martial arts. And I understand the irony of me saying this. There's almost a betrayal of the notion of kata by making it competitive. So Lenny, you were going to say something. Please go ahead.
Yeah, it was just the sentence you said. Maybe I'm paraphrasing here. There's no greater gauge of self-progression than kata. It's something along those lines. You're the only person I've ever heard say that. And to me, I don't see kata as a gauge of self-progression at all. I've yet to meet a student who goes, I'm feeling better about my own progression because I got my kata better. In fact, most of them, it's getting to the stage where most of them are starting to despise it and they just want to be active. Now, some kids...
I'm going to jump in there. Yeah, one very quick comment, Len. And please don't take this in a negative way, because it's not intended in a negative way. It's intended in a realistic way. That's not the word I mean. But anyway, that's completely dependent both on the perspective of the student and the perspective that the club puts forward. If you train with an eye toward practicality, whether it's street practicality or tournament practicality, then I agree. Kata is a waste of time. But I wasn't brought up in that framework. I was brought up, and I still continue to think in the framework of the only thing sparring tells you is if you're better than the guy who's in front of you. Kata tells you if you're better than your own previous self. That's why I say that kata is a better gauge of your progress than sparring is, because sparring will always be subjective relative to who you're fighting. Kata is always compared against your ability to do it. So it's a much clearer gauge on your progress.
If I can interject a little bit, there was in the Jiu Shin Club in the early days, I have to give Mark Bell credit for putting this up on the dojo wall. It's a quotation that said, kata is moving meditation, which is something that stuck with me all these years and I still agree with. Keeping that in mind and thinking of kata as something you can compete in and are scored by and applauded for is obscene.
I'm disagreeing there.
I'm disagreeing there too. Can I jump in? I think, Mitch, you're one of the best kata guys I've seen out there. You could be making some good cash competing.
Well, that's what it's all about.
Only fans, number sign Mitch.
Listen, I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass or anything. But Mitch, you're very good at it, and there's guys out there who don't fight, but they compete in kata, and they're very good. And I think it's a shame that people in their 50s and 60s who were very good in their early 30s and 40s and 50s don't compete anymore, because they could be out there doing it and showing these young guys how good you are, or the competitors are at senior ages. right?
But what is this? What is this obsession we seem to have with showing everybody how good I am, or how good they are, or how good he and she is? What difference does that make?
Okay, what about when you did Aikido and you went to a tournament and you doing a drawing of the sword, showing, and same thing with Aikido.
The difference is scoring. The difference is competing. The difference is putting it out there just to have it out there, as opposed to like score me on this.
I agree with Bob. I agree with Bob. Look, I could get into a whole psychological discussion about why I compete at tournaments, and I hope it doesn't degenerate into that, because I might have to kill myself. But I agree with Bob. Kata, look, when I do kata, and please forgive the cliche that I'm about to spew, I'm going to throw up when I say it, I'm at a point in my training where my mental state when I perform kata is more important to me than my physical ability to do it. And this is something that was imparted to me very early on, that kata is more of a reflection of your mental state than it is of your physical state. And I've always looked at kata that way. So to step up on a competitive stage and do a kata is asking people to judge me on something that I consider at this point not irrelevant, but certainly less important than the reasons that I do kata in the first place. Rick,
kata should be part of a demonstration, not part of a tournament.
I almost agree. Rick, you've said almost nothing during this whole podcast. What's up?
You're taking kata, like, as a cue belt, you say there's no competition, but there is for yourself. If you go to tournaments and you're going from orange, green, blue, whatever, and you have someone in another club or someone from your own club that's going through the same stages, you can get a feed on whether they're doing the same as you, whether you are, you know, progressing at the same rate, whether you're getting better, whether they beat you this time, whether you beat them this time. Once you get the black belt, like you, for Mitch, there is no being better. I mean, who you compete against? You've competed against the same guys for the last 3 years. And sometimes you take first, sometimes they take first. Well, rarely anybody else ever beats you. But it's like, you can't compare that. Like, you're now into kata for yourself. You're into the Zen part of the kata. But QX, there's good competition there. I mean, there's a gauge they can use to say that, yes, I am getting better at this kata stuff.
No. And here's my argument against that, Rick. When someone gets up and does a kata, if they win, all that proves is that they sucked less than everybody else in their division. And if they lose, all that means is they sucked more than everybody else in their division. It is not a scale of how good they are relative to their own ability. And this is my problem with kata in tournaments is...
Can we
go ahead, Darren.
It's just... Now you're talking about kata and the value of kata and your opinion of kata and stuff like that. I'm just trying to direct it back to the tournaments.
Fair enough.
With what you're saying in the sense that I think kata just holds the same value in a tournament as sparring does. The idea is it's a different aspect for whatever value you get out of it in a tournament setting. So once again, you get the competition. When I was a kid, I fucking hated sparring. So all I used to do in tournaments was go in kata. And the instructor forced me to start going in sparring, and I hated it. I was only interested in kata. So I wasn't, I don't think I was trying to win, because when I first started out, everybody was better. Do you know what I mean? You're just, everybody's better, you pay your money, and you don't win. But it's the competitive thing, as you said at the start, and as I mentioned, being a kid, and whether it's football or basketball or anything, it's the competitive. It's to overcome your fears. You're performing in front of judges.
Absolutely.
In front of peers, and you're performing. Yep. Back in the day, there used to be people in the audience watching the whole spectacle and everything. So it was putting you in a situation that you were uncomfortable with and forcing you to try. Like when you talk about the Zen and doing kata for yourself, it's all that same thing applies, but now you're applying it to a situation that is not You're not on your own doing it for yourself. You're being forced to keep those same morals, the same values, but in a setting that's totally uncomfortable.
Sure.
So whether you win or lose is irrelevant. And there's something about if you only do what you do, that's all you have to gauge on. There's something. The other thing I used to like about a tournament is watching somebody else perform a kata. You just sent around the guy doing the sai kata very well. So if I never saw that, if I never went to a tournament, I would never see somebody doing a sai kata better than me. So I would only be able to judge whether I was doing it a little bit better. And if I thought I was doing it better, I might be thinking, hey, I'm progressing, this is great. And then you go to a tournament and see somebody do something really good, and you're like, holy shit, now I really got to work at this. Not because you want to beat the guy, but because you've just realized that you're not progressing in the same way that you want to or you thought you were. And it's more inspiration, aspiration, you get goals out of it, and all the other things that you get from that. So I think kata has the same value in a tournament as sparring does. Whether it's realistic or not, it does something better for your overall character and your aspirations.
Oh, dude, don't get
what
me
Darren
wrong.
Said.
There are two aspects to kata that are positive influence on somebody's life. Getting up in front of a crowd, going through the anxiety, doing
the whole...
I
fucking hate it to this day. I've done it a million years and I still get nervous as shit.
Dude, yeah, exactly.
And I don't actually care. When I go in, I don't actually care. I could beat up all the judges. So I don't give a shit whether they like my kata or not. But I still get nervous and I shake and I feel like a little kid. Again, it's totally out of my comfort zone.
Absolutely.
So I just think it has value to put yourself in that situation.
Precisely. So now, and that's a huge that's a huge aspect of it. And the other one is the personal one. Where that stuff doesn't matter and is personal, and you're doing it for yourself, and what's interior to your own skull is what matters more than anything else. And like you've gone to demonstrations where you've gone through like Iaido demonstrations, and the guy draws a sword, and you're bored out of your skull, but you don't know what's going on inside of his skull. So that's part of my point. You've got the two aspects, but the one aspect I hate about kata is a 6.3 out of 10. 7.9. Fuck you with your point scoring on how I felt during this thing that I just did. And both the aspects that we were talking about, both the aspects, the anxiety and the getting up there in front of people, and the personal meditative, those have nothing to do with somebody putting up their hands and saying that's a 7.2.
And fair enough, Bob, I absolutely am on board with that. But I'm curious, Lenny, are you a fairly competitive? I'm assuming your perspective on how the club runs is reasonably competitive, yeah?
As in, we actively participate in competitions, is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
No. No, I've been kind of cajoled back into it after turning me back on it a few years ago and went, fuck this, I'm never doing competitions again. There are, you know, and I walked away from it mainly because of politics and nonsensical rules. And that's
what
turned
that's
me
what usually
against.
Happens.
Yeah, and it was only since we launched the kids class many years ago that the kids were looking to compete, and I said, okay, they want to compete. And we had a couple of successful years where we did inter-club stuff with people that I knew were kind of decent practitioners. But now it's starting to branch out that they're spreading their wings a bit more, and there's a national governing body. But even at that, I'm walking away from that going, this is like, oh,
wow,
man, it's so frustrating. So
well, it sounds this is political, is it? Is it? It's the government rules.
Not so much political. You see so many injustices in competition and stuff that's being applauded.
It's part of the real world, so it's a good thing to expose people to.
I don't
disagree with that whatsoever. But when you're going, you've got people who are good, excellent practitioners, and they're going to competitions and they're losing on ridiculous technicalities, or they're losing because of nepotism and favoritism because they're not in the club and so on. It kind of turns you away. You know what? What is the point?
The thing is, when you go to competitions, right? And yeah, I've seen favoritism by the referees, mm-hmm. I think the reason why people like me to referee, I don't give a shit whose club you can't come from. Just show me what you can do, and do the best form you can, and I'll judge you on that because you know
you're a rare breed, though, Joe.
This is true. The other thing is, when I referee, if I'm the center referee, I try to get, we're talking about the WKC. We only use three referees for kata and same thing with fighting. It speeds up things. And I try to get a different instructor or a black belt to help me in one and another one on the other side of me. You know, you don't have favoritism like I got, let's say, two Jushin guys in the ring with me. You know, that way you won't have favoritism. I'm not saying you guys are like that. These guys are more like what I am. You don't give a shit where they come from as long as they compete and they perform the best they can.
Okay, guys, let's pause this for a second. We've talked for a little bit about the value of tournaments. Before we go to our break, let's go around the table a couple of times and talk about the negative impacts of tournaments. Yes, there are some absolutely positive things that tournaments offer, and I think we've covered a couple of them. Let's talk about what do tournaments do that are, or what impacts do tournaments have that aren't necessarily positive. And I'll throw one out just to get the ball rolling. And I've experienced this at the club over the years. When you have a student who's got an attitude, who's a problem child, and he goes to a tournament and wins. When someone wins at a tournament, the natural reaction or the natural result of that win is the student goes, I'm obviously pretty good because I won. And like I said earlier, my perspective is, look, if you win at a tournament, all that means is you sucked less than everybody else. It's not an indicator of how good you are. It's an indicator of how good you were compared to the other people at the tournament, which I don't think has much value. So one of the negative impacts of tournaments is I think it leads people to think that they're better than they actually are, or it leads them to focus their training in a direction that might not be as value added as it could be.
You go to a high prestige university and you excel, that's one thing. You go to a community college and you excel, that's a different thing. Is that not kind of parallel to what we're talking about here? Like the tournaments that we attend and officiate over, they're not the highest caliber in the world. Like, let's face it. So to excel in those is to be mediocre, right?
Yeah, but the competitors don't know that.
Right.
The impact on the competitors is the same.
And that brings me to another point that I was going to bring up, and that is changing attitudes over the generations. We're all old. And now we're dealing with Gen.
Sorry, Bob. Hang on.
Speak for yourself.
No, hang on. Wait. Stop. Let's Bob. I want you to keep that in mind, and that'll be the first topic we talk about when we come back from the break. But that's a complete.
Turn off
the topic. So. Yeah. But it's a good topic, so let's talk about it when we come back from the break. So, Lenny, what is your perspective on the negative impact, if you see any? What are the negative impacts of competition?
Yeah, basically what I highlighted earlier, you know, you like to go into the playing field and people who are, a level playing field, people who are mindful of that seem to be the exception rather than rule it a lot of times, and there's far too much leaning towards favoritism and no, I won't say bending in the rules, but people interpreting them in different ways, and that has a negative impact on confidence of students. It disillusions you, and any politics to come with it. So, yeah.
Joe, I'm curious. You are so heavily embedded in the tournament circuit. To your mind, are there negative impacts on the students as a result of competing at tournaments?
Personally, sometimes the black belt who the kid trains with, or the student, pardon me, trains with, the instructor, his ego gets the better of him, and it brushes off on the kid, unfortunately. And I hate that.
Mitch, this is one of your talking points about had a coach on the side who challenged every play, yeah, and yelled from the sidelines.
Yeah.
Well, it depends. It depends.
Go ahead.
In the black belt divisions, yes, there are coaching in the circuit that I'm now hooked up with. At the regular tournaments, like the one I'm going to be running, there's no coaching on the side, even for the black belts.
Let me ask you something, Joe. At that tournament, if someone does coach on the side, what's the repercussion?
Well, you warn them once, and the second time, the other guy gets the point, or you get the person removed. That's the other thing.
See, that's an admirable perspective, but it's one I rarely see at tournaments where rules are laid out at the front of the tournament, at the beginning of the tournament. Here are the rules. But there are dozens and dozens of instances over the course of the tournament where those rules are broken, seemingly without repercussion. And
I went to Canadian Championships 2 years ago in Ottawa. It was for the WKC, and there was this one instructor from Quebec. I'm not going to get into his name or anything like that. He was rude to the center referee and everybody, so they walked him to the door. And same thing, most of the people who belong to the WKC and go to the provincials and the nationals and the local tournaments, you know, I always tell, if I give someone one of my flyers or if I go to a tournament, did you read the rules? And, I did. I said, no, you didn't, because this is, here it is. And I show them. And I'm an idiot because I keep the rules on my phone so I can pull it up anytime. Or they have the rules right at the table. I've gone to many tournaments, like Blake. He puts the rules on the table. So, you know, you got something to refer to. Not everybody carries their cell phone in their back pocket.
Darren, thoughts on negative impacts of tournaments?
I spent the first few minutes listening to everybody else, and I just wanted to retort on those and go back to the positives. But in light that we're not doing that, I won't contradict any of those. As far as the negative, I think, and once again, it applies to almost any competition or any life situation, and it's that if you are training at a club and it becomes a kind of bubble, and this is what you're doing, and this is your growth, and you're succeeding well, and you're achieving your goals and everything, and then you go to a tournament setting, and you're exposed to whatever negatives are there, whether it's bullshit, favoritism, all the things that you guys have already pointed out, that can kind of, say, impact on your impression of the martial art or karate or whatever it is, and whether you want to continue practicing or ever attending a tournament again. So I think it's when you're exposed to any negative in a tournament, the negative impact is just experiencing the negativity that you can experience at a tournament, which puts you in a position where you become disillusioned on the art, disillusioned on competition, disillusioned in mankind because of the shit that goes on.
Okay, but let me frame the question differently then. Let's say you take your students or you go to a tournament that is run flawlessly. Fair rules, the rules are followed without question. I still think that inherent in the notion of a tournament, there are some negative things.
I can't think of one that I don't particularly agree with what you guys have said to now about, as you said, if it's run flawlessly, I can't really think of a negative thing in it.
I can't remember a flawless tournament.
No, of course
there's hypothetically.
It was hypothetical.
But I can't get away from the point I had made earlier, which is no matter how well the tournament is run, you're gauging your ability against
What's the negative on that, Mitch, though? You asked for a negative. All you did was point something out. It's not necessarily a negative, if
to
you know
define,
what I mean.
Like, well, I do. To define... Au contraire, mon ami. To judge your own ability in a competitive framework, you will never, ever get an accurate perspective because the people you compete against are always different.
That's not a negative. That's not a reason not to attend a tournament.
Sure.
That's right.
I don't think
it is. No, is it?
No.
Okay. I was gonna give into that, and I'm not. The whole point of the martial arts is to get better than you are, right? Here's where I am now in my ability. I want to get better than that. I think we can agree. That's kind of a universal perspective on training. You want to get better.
That's anybody in life, I think everybody would like to be better.
Okay, let's not do a 2-hour diatribe on that. I'm right. Let's just take that as a truth. Mitch. Hang on, Joe. We want to get better, okay? If I go out into a tournament and I happen to be competing against people who are not as experienced as I am, that's not going to help me get any better. If I go out to a tournament and I compete against everybody who's better than me, that's going to give me a skewed perspective on my ability. My point being that if the goal is to get better, comparing myself against subjective opponents doesn't help me improve because
Wrong.
It doesn't...
Wrong.
Dude, all it is, even without getting into the wrongness of all that, it's just, it doesn't matter. If you get something positive out of a tournament, it's worth going to. Yes, there might be lots of negatives. Maybe it doesn't improve your ability. But
dude,
like Joe said at the start,
question.
You no, but it is the question.
The question, no, the question is, what are the negatives about going to a tournament? What you've just done is said, yeah, there's some negatives, but let's look at the positives. I'm asking you to give
me some
negatives.
Got a good point, but no, I meant in relation to what you just said. You just went, if all you want to do is get better, because apparently that's all they want to do, a tournament is not a good gauge of whether you're better or not.
And that's a negative of a tournament. That's the
okay,
one we're
yes,
talking about.
I'll give you
the
that.
More,
I'll give you that one because it's a negative. I'll give you yes.
No,
you're right.
Fair
it's just
enough.
That,
no,
okay.
No,
I just don't think you're listening to the positives.
The more experience you have fighting against people, I don't care what ability they have, the better you will be as a martial artist. Period.
Bob,
I think so.
Okay,
I agree with Bob on that one.
100%.
Better competition you're competing against makes you better because you want to eventually either beat them in kata or beat them in fighting.
Jesus Christ. So all that matters is that I beat the other guy. That's what you're saying.
Okay.
No.
I'm no, but
that's what he just said that.
Joe did. I didn't say that.
I did. Did you hear me say? Did you hear me say? Hey, Bob. Did you just say this? I know Joe said it. My point is, when we reduce the martial arts to being better about that, when we reduce what we do to being better than the other guy, not only is that an offense to what we're trying to accomplish,
Jesus, we're not reducing
but
the art. We're just going to a competition one Saturday. We're not fucking basing our entire training and life perspective on it. We're just entering the competition one Saturday.
Okay. Can you honestly say that people who go to tournaments and win don't walk out going, you didn't even let me finish?
Well, no, because I know where you're going with it.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, but the people who are listening
don't. Yeah, you're
don't.
Right in that. Okay. But the point, I don't give a shit about the other people. We're wondering whether we get anything out of it. And maybe our students.
No.
And can we teach students in a manner that they will benefit from it as well?
I am saying that very often how you perform at a tournament works in opposition to your getting better as a practitioner.
Oh, that depends.
Of course it depends. Bob, I didn't say it as a universal truth. I said...
Yes, you did. Oh, yes, you did.
No, I didn't. No.
Mitch, I just want to say this one thing. I went to tournaments for 8.5 years, and I didn't win friggin' nothing. But
I took home a participation medal.
Okay. But
Darren's got a wall full of participation medals.
I celebrate mediocrity in my place.
I hated doing kata because I didn't get into martial arts until I was 18. My old man said to me at 12 years old, I went into Hitashinas, and I said, I wouldn't mind learning this. My uncle took me. He says, when you can afford it, no problem. But listen, I did, and I had a full-time job, and my job put the food on the table. And the point is, the more you practice and you compete, the better you get. And
the more you practice, the better you get. Just because you compete, that doesn't make you better. Competing measures, it doesn't make you better. Training makes you better. Training makes you better.
You just said
training with
measures.
Better people. And training with
training,
better
just, no, just wait, hold on. Measures. Competing subjectively measures you against the people you're competing with. Competing does not inherently wait. Competing does not inherently make you better. The only thing that makes you better. The only thing that makes you better is training, not competing.
That's not true. It wrong. Can make you better totally just wrong. In different aspects. It might not make you physically more capable, but it adds different elements to your game, your psyche, your confidence.
That's true.
There's so many
fair
different
enough.
Aspects
yep.
that you would get
fair
from
enough.
It. It doesn't make you better practical-wise. You're right on that.
Yes, it does a little bit. A little bit.
It could if you take
bit.
It to heart
tiny,
and it makes you train
a
harder.
Bit, a tiny bit for that 30 seconds that you fought for. And yes, Mitch, you said competition is a measure. And yes, it is. You measure, and then incrementally during that fight, you will improve a tiny bit in some sense or another.
Bob, all I can say is, based on the experience I've had at tournaments, I do not consider my tournament experience as a factor in my improvement. What
can
improves?
Can I contradict that? Based on
can just give
your
me give me one give me 1 second, and you absolutely can just let me finish that thought. The improvement comes with the hours and hours of training, and the hours and hours of time put in when I train, not the 30 seconds I'm on. I'm in the ring at
God
a tournament. Darren, go ahead.
Yes, it does.
No, it's
Darren's turn.
I was making the point of what you just kind of said in the end. I remember when you were attending the world competition here in Ireland, and it wasn't the tournament that you were interested in doing. It was the work you had to put in order to compete at that tournament at a level that you could respect yourself as a showing. So if you just came to Ireland and just dicked around, that doesn't do you any good. So it forced you to put in the effort. So that's kind of what I was saying about the experience you get from a tournament. It's not necessarily being in the tournament, but I think that was my point. I might have worded it wrong. It's not necessarily being in the tournament that you gain the experience. It's
Can I just say,
let him finish, Bob.
I thought he was finished.
Oh,
how could you think I was finished while I was still talking?
your tone, your Bob general...
Wait for a lull in the conversation. when nothing's going on for a bit...
Yeah.
But no, I think you know what I was getting at. And you said it in the end anyway. Yes. Like, I was ready to jump on you saying, no, that's bullshit, because you forced yourself to train heavily in order to compete in the tournament at a level that would... I can't think of the term that you were comfortable with. Like, you didn't want to go in there as a dick. Like, you actually wanted to make a showing kind of thing. I'm not
Got
sure what I'm...
Yep.
But the idea is that you had to do it in order to get it. So by inherently, you do gain experience or better yourself by entering the tournament. By that very nature of it.
I have a really great point to make.
Go ahead, hey, Bob.
All right.
I don't think it's
before you throw a before you throw a clot.
Throw a clot.
I don't think it's going to be great. I think it's going to be adequate.
Who hasn't fought at a tournament, and it doesn't matter what ability the person in front of you had, who hasn't fought against them and then reflected on that afterward about what you could have done better?
I'm going to say that almost everybody does. But the 15 seconds you're actually fighting, you don't remember it well enough for that reflection to actually have. You're absolutely right, Bob. Everybody reflects on what they did. Everybody reflects on what they did when they were sparring. People who win reflect less than people who lose. People who lose obviously reflect more.
No, that's a generalization.
It's a pretty solid one.
Well, you're judging other people.
Yes, I am, and I humanity sucks, and I think winning, people go, look at me, I won, I don't have to get better. People who lose.
It's not fair. It's not fair.
I'm not interested. That's not what we're talking about. My point is, whatever reflection you do on a fight, and we're not talking about a UFC fight where, first of all, your livelihood depends on it, and secondly, you're 15 minutes in the ring. When we're at a tournament, one fight could last as little as 2-3 minutes. When your adrenaline is pumped as much as it is, and after the whole thing's over, you might try and reflect, but I honestly think the amount of practical reflection that you do is pretty minimal.
That's wrong. And the reflection that you do on that fight can last a lifetime.
Guys, let's take a break. We're going to go have a drink, have a pee, whatever we got to do. We'll be back in a couple of minutes, folks. Okay, folks, we're back from the break. As usual, we didn't get past the first talking point in the first half of the podcast. And going into the second half, Bob had brought up a really interesting point or talking point. So, Bob, can you lay out what you were going to say in 1,000 words or less relative to the point you wanted to make? Go ahead.
I think I can. Okay, we're living in a different age, and we're all getting older, and up and coming, these are young Gen Zs, or whatever you call them. And I'm wondering what would happen. You guys are all veterans, and you guys are all experienced at refereeing at tournaments for sparring. What would happen? I was just curious. What would happen if a competitor came in who was a male transitioning to female and insisted on fighting in the women's division? In your
that's room. An easy.
I think it's totally easy.
Look, let me put it out there, and we'll see who disagrees. If you're born a male, you compete with a man. If you're born a female, you compete with a female. Period. Anybody disagree with that?
I agree.
Okay. So no one disagrees with that. Next.
Is there going to be a rising protest against that attitude?
But as long as you look at, like, when Joe was talking earlier about the rules are laid out, I think you just point to the rule and say, look, I don't care who you identify with. This is just the way it is. This is the rules. There might be another tournament or another area you could explore, but it's not this one.
Well, fair enough. Fair enough. Do you see this happening in 10 years' time?
I was talking with Mike Bernardo one day on the telephone because we talk occasionally, and he's the head of the WKC in Canada, and he was the guy who started the WKC in the world, right? Because they got pissed off at the WKU or something like that. He says, yeah, he says, I haven't had the problem yet about, you know, putting in these, having another gender competition in the tournament. But there's no way he's going to let a guy compete with the women
That's what he's looking at in case it happens.
I've been following the trans debate in national and international competition, and there seems to be a real backlash now against allowing trans athletes to compete in the with the gender they identify as. Like, I think there was just in the last couple of days, the Olympic Committee said that trans, and I think it was, I don't know if it was for all events, but certainly for one of the running events, that trans women would not be allowed to compete with cis women in the Olympics, and there's that backlash. I honestly think 10 years from now, this conversation won't exist. It'll be done. It's a trend. It's a nonsensical trend, and I think that's all it is.
And I'll go out on a limb here and probably put my hand out for a slap with any listeners who may be sensitive to it, but it seems to be all men who are transitioning to women who are trying to fucking dominate the women's division because they're not good enough to compete in their own. You don't see any women transitioning to men looking to take on the men's division.
I thought about that. Yeah, it's true.
I'm especially interested in Lenny's opinion because he's got a big stake in this whole idea.
I could think of one person who transitioned from a woman to a male. Which is Cher's, it was her daughter. I forget the name. Chastity, I think her name was. That's the only one.
Is she
one
a martial artist?
No.
Why are we talking about her?
Well, we're talking about the.
In my personal experience, I know a number of women who have transitioned to men. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is. All of the press is given to men who transition to women and want to compete against women. I have literally not heard of one woman transitioning to a man who wants to compete with the men. I don't want to waste too much time on this. I think it's a trend. It's what's making the news now. And 10 years ago, all of this nonsense will be a non-issue. However, it works itself out. I've had it go by the wayside already,
Mitch. Just because Bob mentioned it earlier, I'm having parents asking, are divisions in cis male and cis female now?
Wait, let's not turn this into a societal political debate on trans versus not. Okay, I think we're all. Bob, look, you brought it up. Is there any other questions you want to explore relative to that topic?
Not at all. I just threw it in there to see what would happen, and now I've seen what happens. So yeah.
I think if you wanted to be inclusive and sympathetic to all them things and everything, I think an example is say you take jiu-jitsu tournaments and stuff. You have the weight divisions, and then what you have is called an open class, and anybody can fight beyond their weight, and sometimes. If you're really good, you can actually do really good way above your weight. And it just kind of includes everybody and it takes away from that. And I think if they really wanted to address that and be inclusive at a tournament, they could have, say, an open class. And anybody that was transgender or anything, they're welcome to compete. And there you go. No one cares. So if that's what you're all about and you win that one and you think you're great because you won that particular one, so be it. Get whatever you get out of it. But there's still going to be a male division and a female division. And if you don't fit into either one of those and you want to go in the open division, have at it. But if there's enough of them and you decide you want to have that open division, go ahead. But you're still not competing in the male or female. It's just going to be gender and that's it.
I just want
to you can still include them. You can be still empathetic toward them.
I just want to make sure that every instructor here is ready for a backlash. If there is one.
Well, I know in the karate tournaments, there is an open division for weight class. So, yeah, I think that's if they're going to do anything, you can put them in there as far as I'm concerned.
Okay, let's go on to the second talking point on the actual talking points, which was And this is drawn from my personal experience. I was at one of Monty Guest's tournaments. This is probably 20 years ago. And I was fighting in the black belt division against another black belt. We were about the same age. But he had his coach, his instructor on the side. And his instructor was yelling stuff into the ring and challenging every point. Like he was screaming instruction to his fighter. Every time I would score a point, he would challenge the point, whether it was a valid point or not. He was just being incredibly adversarial from the sidelines. And then once the tournament was over, and who won is irrelevant, I can't remember, frankly, but we were in the change room getting changed, and he came up to me, the instructor came up to me and said, "Oh, well, you know, no hard feelings, it's all part of the game, blah, 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 blah." And I'm just curious what your thoughts about that are. Is that kind of chest thumping, that kind of intimidation tactic, which is how I perceived it, is that just part of what competition is about now?
It is for those with the superego.
Yes.
Okay, yeah, good. Let me change that. Is it an acceptable part of the tournament scene?
No, absolutely not.
No.
Hang on, wait. No. Rick, elaborate on that.
All right, you can cheer your fighter on, you can do stuff, but way we have it, it is not like the tournament we went to in Ireland, they had a coach. And even those coaches, they didn't interfere with the running of the ring. This guy was interfering with the running of the ring. If there was controversy, they would say, "Excuse me," and talk to the center referee or whatever, and they would give their fighters advice during breaks. Cheering your fighter on is fine. But I mean, when you start to get to the point where you are challenging points and telling your fighter what to do while they're in there, no, that's unacceptable. And it's against our rules.
The thing is, God bless Monty. I love him to death. But back in the day, they didn't have rules like you'd remove the spectator or a coach for challenging all that bullshit. Except if you competed in the NBL in the States, where Scotty they had a friggin' handbook what was about a quarter inch thick with all the rules and subsections and all this bullshit. The thing is, if you go to the Nationals, everyone's allowed a coach. But if the spectators on the side are harassing the referees or the scorekeepers, you can have them removed, and we've done it.
It's the principle of the thing that disgusts me. The whole raise a stink just because you can. The whole fucking I win because I yell louder. Fuck
okay,
you.
This,
I really, th- I wait. Really. This really okay. Go ahead.
Look, wait a sec. I wanna bring up an anecdotal story, and I know this is. I'm going to call out names, and I don't care. I was at one of Monty Guest's tournaments again. This is a long time ago, and I was center refing a black belt division, and Harold Howard. I don't want to make this personal, and I don't want to make it opinion. I want to reflect what actually happened. Harold Howard had one of his students fighting in the ring that I was center reffing. And Harold Howard made absolutely no bones about arguing the points that were being called, to the point where he was so loud and so obnoxious and so opinionated. I don't remember the lengths to which he went, but it was obvious to anyone there that he absolutely disagreed with the points that were being called in that ring. After the ring was over, Monty Guest called me into his office. It was at the Hombu Dojo on Dundas. He called me into his office and he said, "I'd really like you to go out and talk to Harold Howard and try and apologize and calm him down for what happened in the ring." I was a very new black belt at the time. I might have been second degree, maybe. I think I was first. I said, out of deference to Monty Guest, I will talk to him. I flat out refuse to apologize to him. I didn't understand, and this has happened at a couple of tournaments I've been to over the years where one person steps out of line, and for some reason, the organizer or the head of the tournament feels a need to genuflect to the person screaming the loudest rather than the person or the perspective that is correct. Like he said to me in that office, look, I know that everything's fine, but he's upset. Could you go and try and make him less upset? It happened at Bob Walters' tournament, Rick, a couple of years ago, where he had a black belt as a center ref in the black belt kata division, who just completely disregarded the rules that Bob Walters had set out for the tournament.
Yeah, I was competing with you in that one.
Yes, and there were a couple of other people. He scored the ring completely in opposition to the rules of the tournament. Bob Walters came up to us as the competitors afterwards and said, look, I really want to apologize to you guys. This guy wasn't doing what I wanted him to do. The irony was, instead of going to the guy who made the mistake and dressing him down, he came to us and tried to excuse the behavior. This is what I don't understand about these types of personalities and perspectives at tournaments. Why is there so much genuflection to the people who scream the loudest instead of to what's supposed to be happening?
Well, I'll address that point about Harold. At the time, he was competing in the NBL, and he was also competing at the NASCA. In the NBL, you could protest every point and shit like that, which is a bunch of bullshit as far as I'm concerned. If you're there to fight, fight, and that's it, and shut up, and just, that's what the way I was taught. Don't argue with the ref, and if you're a coach, you shouldn't be arguing with the center referee. Not unless if it's a blatant thing. And Monty doesn't like to hurt anybody's feelings. That's why he sucked you in into doing it, buddy.
I and you know what? I want to speak to that, Joe. I completely understand that perspective. But my perspective has always been, does he not understand that while he's trying to placate the screamer, he's offending most everybody else? I don't understand why he took that position. No, sorry, I do understand why he took that position. I couldn't disagree more with why he took that. He wanted to placate the screamer instead of saying to everybody who saw what was going on and understood the right and wrong of it, that here's what the right and wrong is. Instead of that, let's placate the guy who's making the most amount of noise. I just didn't...
He could have healed the whole situation.
Right. Yes, exactly. He could have. Chose not to. But anyway. Okay, so that notion of... And we talked about this on a podcast about a year ago, Bob. I remember you having an extreme reaction to this. What?
Me?
What is... The notion of challenging points at tournaments. I remember we were talking about the Jiushin tournament from last year. And the notion that it's okay to step up, and when you see an injustice, when you see a point or a call that is blatantly wrong, that it's okay to challenge it. I remember, Bob, you were vehemently against that. Is that still where you land on that?
Whoa. Are you sure that those are the terms under which I disagreed?
Yeah, we were talking about very generic competitors and their instructors challenging points, and you had a pretty big meltdown about that, saying, what the fuck are you guys talking about? I can't believe I'm hearing this. And I'm just curious, forgetting about that for the moment, Bob, how do you feel now about if there is a call made during a fight that either the competitor or their instructor feels is blatantly wrong? How do you feel about them challenging it?
I'm positive you're slightly mischaracterizing the situation from a year ago. I think I know what you're talking about, but there's the one aspect of respecting the center judge's opinion on what happened during a point. That's one aspect of this. And another is if everyone around that center ref disagrees, including, you know, two-thirds of the corner refs. I'm not talking about the audience, just the center ref and the corner refs. If he has a majority against him, whether that's valid or not, I don't think that was what we were talking about a year ago. To tell
okay,
you the
so
truth.
let's wait. Let's forget about what happened a year ago.
All right.
Let me frame it this way. Okay, there's a sparring match going on. Someone does something. Four out of the five refs score that as a point, but the competitor and the person who got scored on and their instructor feels it was not a valid point, despite the fact that the majority of the refs called it as a point. Do you think there is room for those people to challenge the call?
That's a good one. And I have to say, like, reluctantly, go with the refs.
I agree there.
You kind of have to go with the refs. That would be, if we were looking for a negative on tournaments, that would be one of them. You just have to grin and bear it. The amount of times people lost, that I'd be a corner ref, and I'd watch somebody get a point, and they award it to the other guy, and the fight's over. And I feel bad because I gave it to the guy that lost, because I clearly saw a point. And I know for a fact from where I was standing that the center ref could not have seen that point because it did not go in and he was not facing an area where he could see it. But it's not even my place as a corner ref to approach the head ref and say, dude, you just called a point that there's no way you could have saw from your position. So you just awarded the other guy the win, and that's not fair. But to me, that's just one of the negatives in a tournament. You just get on with it. Everybody moves on. There's going to be another tournament next week or next month. Let's just wipe this and move forward.
You know what? I'm going to go back to that podcast that we had. It was about a year ago. And I'm going to take out sections of it and email it to you guys. Because I remember Darren and Len and I were arguing adamantly in favor of the fact that it's okay to challenge stuff, and Bob was losing his mind over that. So let me give you another scenario.
Challenging it is one thing, but being overbearing about it is different.
Oh no, I'm not talking about stomping on the ground and throwing your helmet and stuff like that.
There is a system of putting in a complaint.
Yes, I'm talking about you feel you have a legitimate claim against something that happened in the ring. Is it okay to make an issue of that?
Let me throw this in because this is pertinent. What if there were cameras trained on this thing and you could review the tape?
My God, I've gone to the Karate Ontario tournament. They have a camera, and you can challenge, and you can ask for a replay and shit like that. That's as far as I'm concerned. That's too much bullshit. You know,
No.
Yes. I don't want to sound rude or anything, but the reason why is if you have cameras and you can go to the replay, fuck, the tournaments will last a fucking week.
But they'll be more accurate. They'll be more accurate.
No, they won't.
Well, then
you don't even need the judges anymore. Wait. No, they won't. And I'll tell you why, Bob. Hang on a sec. If you have a camera on a hockey game, okay, either the puck crosses the line into the goal or it doesn't. And a camera will help you understand that. The problem is, in a fight, the camera is from one particular angle. Just like every judge looks at it from one particular angle. So I could show you a camera shot of a point that looks like a point from one angle, but doesn't look like a point from another. And that's why the cameras are not viable.
But it's another perspective on that point.
But I agree.
Now we've got six.
Joe, you can hear. This is a tournament. It's not a world championship. The tournament.
It's a good thing. It's not a bad thing to have another perspective on that point.
Okay, so Bob, where do you draw the line? So wait, we've got five judges, right? We've got five judges. The points challenge. We bring in a camera view. Now we've got six. Now we've got six perspectives. Are you saying that 35 perspectives is better than six?
Yes.
Where do we draw the line? Because you have to draw a line somewhere.
No, you don't.
Yes, you do.
The more the better.
We'd have to have a camera from every angle, a camera at the bottom, and a camera on the floor.
That's right.
No,
and Rick,
that's not what he's saying. Rick, what I'm saying
that's
is
exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Jesus Christ.
Listen,
you don't need an infinite number of cameras following
your logic. So how many do you need?
You're getting at it.
No, Bob, you're the one. Wait, no, I'm going to challenge you. You're the one who said, you're the one who said the more perspectives, the better.
Yes.
But then you said an infinite number is not right.
Viable.
So somewhere.
I said viable.
Okay, so the number lies somewhere between five and infinite.
Yeah, the more the better. What is that?
Where do we draw the line,
stupid?
Though?
Stupid.
Where do we draw the line?
Line. There's no line. You're talking about introducing one camera. I'm saying that would be better. And then you say two. Yeah, that would be better. And you say, where do we draw the line? There's no fucking line. Whatever line you draw, the more the better. Jesus fucking Christ. What am
actually,
I doing?
I understand exactly what Bob's saying.
Jesus Christ.
In a roundabout way, he has a good point.
I'm going to commit suicide. Call 911.
Actually, I'm not going to call 911. I'm just going to listen to Bob expire.
Oh my God.
I'm up here in Orangeville, and I can see the steam coming out of your ears.
Hold on a second. Go ahead, Joe.
They have one camera, and I was just talking about the kata. These guys at the Nationals, for either Karate Ontario or the Canadian Karate Association, they have one camera. And there's sometimes guys who are complaining that in the elite that they did a better kata and they want a review on that. That's bullshit. The judges made their decision. Suck it up, buttercup, and away you go.
The thing is, look, kata is different. I can watch someone do a kata and do a kata, do the first three moves of your kata, and I can tell where you're going to stand relative to everybody else. I don't need the whole thing. Come on. Kata's easy.
That's so true.
But the thing is, I've gone to so many friggin' tournaments, and the guys who are refereeing in the corners, they don't move with the fighters.
I hate those fuckers that sit in the chairs. Seriously, I hate those tournaments where they just sit in the chairs. It's like, what the fuck are you doing?
I do too. I do too.
Yeah, I agree.
I said, screw this. At least with the organizations that I've worked, competed in, or worked for, I'm a referee. Even if I'm in the corner, I move with the fighters, and especially if I'm the center, I move with the fighters. I keep usually about 3 feet to maximum 4 feet away from the fighters, so I won't get kicked.
The thing is, when I'm reffing at a tournament, as far as I'm concerned, the center ref has a responsibility to be anywhere in that ring that they need to be to see what's going
on. That's right.
The corner ref. Each of the corner refs, if I'm standing in a corner, my field of motion is halfway on either side of me between where I am and where the next corner ref is, and I should be moving as much as I can back and forth in that line to be able to see what's going on. And I agree with the notion that static judges at tournaments, especially guys who sit in chairs, is nonsense. Okay, guys. We've gone around a couple of blocks here. I don't even know how to bring this one to a close. We've missed three quarters of the talking points, we're just not going to get to them. So let's do this. I can hear Bob's, his heart is pounding in his chest. He's so angry. Bob, are you okay? Like, oh, no, honestly, is there something unresolved that you want to talk about?
Right now, I'm fine. I'm
oh, good. Nice. Calm. Nice.
But
the value has taken effect.
Maybe we should take over these talking points on the next episode. Like, I don't know.
Fine by me. Fine by me.
Fine by me.
Okay, guys, we're 2 hours in, oh, more than 2 hours.
Two fucking hours and finish the whole thing. Let's just go.
Let's go around the table. Lenny, I got to tell you, man, you're worrying me. Over the last few podcasts, you've become so quiet and so non-intrusive. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
It's a zen.
There you
zen
there's your answer. There's your answer. There's your answer.
Need I say more? Fuck you, Lenny.
Okay.
Point proven, Mitch.
We're gonna go around the table once. These are closing points about the podcast we've just had. You can talk about any or all of it. Bob, go ahead.
Oh, me? Oh, geez.
Yeah, last thoughts. Oh. This is it.
Jesus, this is fun. And Joe, I don't know how much fun you had, but I had a fucking laugh. But anyway, that's it. Good night.
Okay, Rick's muted himself, so let's go to Joe. Joe, any last comments about anything we've talked about?
I enjoyed the podcast, arguing with you guys, or you letting me talk. Thank you, Bob. And I'm looking forward to continuing with this discussion. It's only my perspective. It's easy to be the big fish in a small pond, but you got to go out into the lake or the ocean sometimes.
Joe, you know what? I'm so glad that you said that.
That was a great wrap-up.
It really was.
That's all
wow.
I got to say.
That introduces a whole... Okay, we got another 2 hours to go. Fuck. Joe, that was a brilliant point. Thank you for making that. Rick, last comments.
Last comments. I guess it was a very interesting podcast, and everyone had their little go at it. The only thing I can say about the negative aspects of tournaments is most of the negative I could think of has to do with people's ego. And if they take themselves too seriously, it can be a negative. Otherwise, it's pretty good. It sounds like we're going to have some good talking points coming up.
Lenny.
You know, we as usual, like we had a big list of talking points. And of course, the listeners never get to see them like we do. We get a little brief beforehand. And it seems to be that each podcast goes by in the last month or two, we're getting less and less of the talking points done. We're going more and more down the rabbit hole of one of them or two of them in particular.
Mitch Maxine here, everybody. I have to apologize. We had some technical problems at the end of the recording of that last podcast, and a bit of the end was left out. So I just wanted to jump in here real quick on my own and say thanks so much to Bob, Lenny, Darren, and Rick, and special thanks to Joe Galley for taking the time to come on the podcast and talk about tournaments. This was only part one. We're going to finish it up next time around. So once again, this is Mitch Maxine. If you've got any comments or questions, please leave them on my personal Facebook page, the No Mind Podcast Facebook page. Or drop an email to nomindpodcast2021@gmail.com. Sorry about those technical issues. We'll get them ironed out next time around. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you next time. Let's get Bob's out of the way. I'm doing a podcast too, darling.
That was my niece.